It is Thought Leader Thursday, and we're happy to have with us a new thought leader today. Wayne Janis is president of financial planning at Whitnell, an affiliate of Associated Bank. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning.
It's good to have you. Wayne is with Whitnell, an affiliate of Associated Bank. He's one of our new thought leaders. I thought we would start a little first here out of the gate talking about your background a little bit.
Well, I graduated from DePaul University. I'm a CPA and an accountant, and I spent the first 10 years of my life in a Big Eight accounting firm, Arthur Young. So I got a master's in tax degree, and so I do mostly financial planning and tax advice and estate planning for the clients of the firm.
We are looking forward to our conversation with you because you're sort of the tax guru. I think that's an easy way of summarizing all of your experience, right?
I think I like to think of myself as a tax problem solver.
Yeah. Let's start with what people are doing right now, and that is they're getting ready to file their taxes. I've heard from a bunch of people that are, you know, putting things together for themselves that not enough money is being, or too much money is being taken out of their accounts, or not enough money after the tax bill. What should people be thinking about and looking at when they get into their taxes?
Are you talking about for last year or this year?
For the tax year that they're filing right now, so that would be last year. So
for 2017, all of these tax rules that were passed at the end of last year don't apply. So people are thinking about all these limitations. They don't really exist, except that the government did come up with one ruling that said that the advice that was given by a lot of professionals at the end of last year that you should prepay your real estate taxes, the government said, no, you can't deduct those. And so they'll challenge them on a return that you file for last year. But for us, we live in Illinois, we have to understand that the taxes that were actually due to pay in 2018 are taxes that were assessed for 2017. So by prepaying those, you really haven't prepaid your 2018 taxes. You're paying the actual taxes that were assessed for 2017, and that's totally appropriate and legitimate to do.
But next year, that's when we need to pay more attention to that, when we file taxes next year.
Next year, it's a whole different ballgame because most of the itemized deductions have been eliminated. Most people that itemized, when I say most, more than half, will be claiming the standard deduction because of so many deductions that have been eliminated or have shrunk. For example, the real estate taxes and the state income tax, the limit is $10,000 in total. So if you paid $8,000 in real estate taxes and $9,000 in state income tax, that's $17,000. You can only deduct $10,000. Now, they're giving you a standard deduction of $24,000 if you're married. And so if your taxes are limited to $10,000, in order to even itemize, you got to come up with another $14,000 of deductions, mortgages and charitable contributions being the two most likely. But if you don't have a mortgage, if you rent a home, it's pretty hard to get to $24,000 of itemized deductions. Most people that rent are probably going to take the standard deduction.
We heard a lot about how we could perhaps do our taxes on a postcard. That didn't come to fruition, did it?
No, I mean, it's going to be easier for those people that used to have to find all the itemized deductions and figure out when they paid the charity and where, you know, what receipts they have. It means that most people will not have to do that. And the income side of it is usually pretty simple because you get a statement from a bank or a statement from a brokerage firm or your employer showing you what your income is. And so for most people, it will be much simpler. I wouldn't call it a postcard, but I would say it's a lot simpler.
And I guess what I was referring to earlier as we started our interview was at the end of, when you file your taxes this year, there's the worksheet you do for next year so that you know if there's enough withholding, if you're doing the right amount of withholding. And people have been telling me that that too much is being taken out and that they fear they're going to have to pay next year. How do we know if that's the right amount or not?
Well, you almost have to run the math because if you especially if you're married and there's withholding coming from two different employers, the likelihood is, I've seen it in our own company, that based on the tables, the government is taking out probably more than is necessary to cover the taxes. And so that suggests that you'll end up with a refund. But if you're having a trouble paying your bills, it's going to be a little tricky.
And so I haven't had to do this in a while. So you go in and you just have your company withhold more, right?
Well, you can ask them to withhold more. They always do that. And you can also, if you think that they're withholding too much, you can claim more withholding allowances. You can file a Form W-4, and they can reduce your withholding based on claiming additional withholding allowances.
There had been all this discussion about in February and March is when most Americans would see whether or not they were impacted by this in terms of getting more in their take-home pay. Not a lot of folks were. I don't want to talk about the political nature of all of this, but that was a letdown for a lot of people that more wasn't taken out of their paychecks.
Yeah, I think that people were surprised by that. They thought that the result would be different. I thought they'd be paying, in some cases, more so because they're losing deductions. In some cases, they thought they'd be paying less because they're going to get deductions that they otherwise wouldn't have had. So it goes both ways because people that don't own a home didn't lose a real estate tax deduction and aren't worried about the mortgage interest being impacted by the law. They're probably just going to get more deductions. So the winners come out to be people that are renting that are most likely going to take the standard deduction.
In all of your experience, how would you describe what we saw happen with this tax bill? Lots of changes, watershed changes, a big deal.
I remember going through this because in the year-end planning for last year, lots of issues came up. You had the House version, the Senate version, and the actual law is over 500 pages long, and it didn't get finalized till December. And so if you're going to do any kind of planning, you had to deal with what was there then. And so we're kind of rushing around, a lot of articles written, and it was also difficult because there's a lot of issues with the language, because the AICPA issued a letter to the Treasury, a 22-page letter, asking the Treasury to explain some of these terms that are in the law. So there's uncertainty about what it even means. So I think that stands today. We don't know what some of these provisions mean. They're asking for definitions. We're asking for how these things apply. A good example of that is that the law said that if you invest in real estate stocks, 20% of the dividends will now be tax-free starting in 2018. Well, the AICPA sent a letter to Treasury saying, well, if you get the dividends directly from a real estate company, we get the 20%. But what if you own the real estate stock in a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund? Do you get the 20% deduction there? Please tell us now, because people are in that situation. They are receiving and we don't know the answer to that. But most people believe that because of the language of the law, taken literally, if you own the stock in a mutual fund versus an outright ownership, you don't get the 20%.
And I've actually heard talk, too, that on Capitol Hill, they're talking about having to go back in and make some changes to the law because it was worded in a way that it would not be able to just have a footnote put on it. You have to go in and change the whole law.
It's pretty common. Every time we've seen tax legislation over the years, within a year after that, there's a tax correction bill that comes out. And these are laws that were passed with adequate time to do the vetting, to have the law firms and accounting firms take a look at them and come up with better language and come up with a final version. This one was put together so quickly, there's probably an even greater need for them to come up with a tax correction bill that'll cover some of the things that are there. Addressing the 22-page letter from the AICPA to the IRS asking for guidance about how these things are to be interpreted.
Lots of questions probably going to be going to the IRS, too, as people sit down to do their taxes and kind of get into all of this. Is the IRS equipped to handle all of this, or are they short-staffed still?
They have been short-staffed, and because of the 500 pages of law, they have to come up with regulations and guidelines and rulings now. So there's more work, and the funding has not been increased to allow them to do that work. In fact, most people would consider this a good thing, that it's estimated that probably their ability to audit tax returns will drop by a third in the future because of the lack of staff and the amount of work that they've got to get done just to deal with these changes.
Somebody might hear that and say, well, maybe I can sneak something in and get past them. Probably not a good idea, is it?
No, not if you get caught.
Yeah,
you know, people do sometimes like to play the audit lottery.
Yeah. You talked earlier about the real estate part of how homeowners might be impacted, but there's also the mortgage interest area. And I know this is, for those of us who don't have a lot of deductions, a key area. What are the changes as we move forward with mortgage deduction?
If you have a mortgage from last year, the interest on that mortgage is still deductible, and that was capped at $1 million. If you end up and if you refinance that mortgage this year and take another million at a new mortgage, that's still deductible if it replaces the $1 million mortgage from last year. So you still get the full deduction for the interest on that loan. If you take out a new loan, the amount that you can borrow that's tax deductible is $750,000. More importantly, a lot of people had home equity loans last year, and the law permitted you to deduct the interest on up to $100,000 of home equity loan. But that was repealed effectively, retroactively, because even if you took out that loan last year, any interest you pay on that home equity loan is now non-deductible by statute. Now, that needs to be clarified a little bit, because if you took out the home equity loan to buy a boat, to go on vacation, to pay for your kids' college tuition, then that interest is no longer deductible. If you took out that home equity loan of $100,000 and the total debt was less than $1 million and that home equity loan was used to improve your home, then the interest on that is deductible now. And if you took out a home equity loan today and the total was less than $750,000, the interest would be deductible if you used that money to improve your home. So a lot of people got that confused.
Yeah, that's good information right there, because I think a lot of people thought it went away completely.
Yes, they did.
And then the other part of that is you mentioned that the people taking out the refinances, that's probably good news to mortgage bankers, right? Because they thought maybe the refinances would dry up a little bit.
Well, it's critical, because a lot of people didn't take out 30-year mortgages. They took out adjustable-rate mortgages, and so when those come due, they want to shop around to get a better rate. And so if they didn't allow the replacement loan to be deductible, they'd be in bad shape, because they'd end up with a non-deductible loan. If they refinanced with another bank and just replace the existing mortgage. So it's good for the people that have mortgages. It's also good for the mortgage bankers.
And there was also a lot of talk about whether or not potential new buyers would be scared off of buying a new home because of some of this. We're not seeing that evidence from home sales.
No, the new homes numbers were down the last month. So we are seeing some of that nationally, but there are pockets where it's very, very strong and other pockets where it's weak. But it's you would expect, if you're not going to be able to deduct real estate taxes and mortgage interest on a large loan, that anything that costs you more, it's going to be fewer people will want to take the bite. So it'll have a propensity, I think, to cause more people to think about renting versus buying.
How does the tax law affect divorces? I know there's some provisions about alimony that could be quite significant.
Yes, a couple of changes too, because the two things that they did, one is they eliminated personal exemptions. So if you had four kids and they fight about who could claim them as an exemption, well, exemptions were repealed. So you don't have any exemptions for your children or even for yourself going forward. They replaced that with the child care credit, which is $2,000 per child. But that doesn't apply to children all the way through college. It stops the year that the child turns 17. And I have twin granddaughters that will be 17 this year, and my son's in the Air Force, and he has a family of seven. He will lose those credits this year because they turned 17 this year. If you're talking about a divorce situation, they'll be arguing about who gets to claim the credit as opposed to who gets the exemption. But the other part of this is, since they eliminated the alimony deduction prospectively, not retroactively, so if you are in a divorce situation and you're paying alimony, the alimony is deductible. If you get divorced this year, the alimony would not be deductible to the person paying it, nor would it be income to the person receiving it. So everybody would say, well, that's a boon to the person receiving it, because they're going to have more money. They don't have to pay tax on this money. But in general, the people that are paying alimony are the ones in a higher tax bracket. if you take a simple example, if I get divorced and I'm paying my ex $10,000 and I'm deducting it at 40%, maybe higher because of state tax, that it cost me $6,000. I pay 10, I save 40%. Now if I pay alimony, I pay 10, it cost me 10. Now my wife, who's a stay-at-home spouse, doesn't have much income, so the $10,000 that she got, she would have paid $1,000 of tax on it. So now you're talking about I lose $4,000 of benefit, she saves $1,000, where'd the other $3,000 go? Well, it went to the government.
Yeah.
And so the pot is smaller. So it may be that it's better for the person receiving it, but the person paying it's going to say, hey, wait a minute, paying you 10, it only cost me 6. I'm not going to pay you 10 now because it's still going to cost me 10.
Yeah.
So it's going to make divorces much more difficult because there's less money.
And probably more acrimonious, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. This week we learned that dividends, because of the tax bill, are at a record high, $109 billion in the first quarter. There are some tax rules about tax deductions where dividends are concerned, aren't there?
Tax deductions for dividends?
I think it's 20%.
Oh, I just spoke about that. In certain cases, the real estate stocks and others, any flow-through entities like oil companies, that the master partnership, master limited partnerships that flow through the income, you get to get a 20% deduction for the dividends. But again, most people own those things inside of a mutual fund, so they may or may not get that 20% deduction. They have to own them outright to be sure. Otherwise, we're guessing.
This is fascinating because there's so much here that you have to be an expert on every page of this tax bill, don't you?
Well, you certainly ought to know the things that affect you or going forward, whether it's investing money or whether you work for a company and you have an option to defer your income or contribute to a 401k plan. You need to have an idea of what's going on because the law that got changed for individuals expires in 8 years. And we go back to what it was last year. So if you're making long-term decisions, they change. So, for example, if you have $1 million mortgage 8 years from now, it's deductible, not today.
Yeah.
And so, and this 20% deduction for dividends goes away. So there's a lot there. Or if you defer your compensation, a lot of companies allow people to do that. What's the bracket going to be later? Because now the brackets are lower. Because what they've done is they've lowered the top federal tax bracket to 37%, but they also allowed you to go through lower brackets and have some of your income taxed at 10%, which last year would have been taxed at 15%. So most people that are earning money as wages or ordinary income will see lower taxes because of that. And so I would expect people have to think about the future because these things they sunset, they end at the end of 8 years.
When we hear a lawmaker say that they not only want to go in and fix some of the problems with it, but make these cuts permanent, would all of that stuff that you've just talked about become permanent instead of retiring in 8 years?
Well, they couldn't make it permanent because politically, in order for them to make them permanent, they needed 60 votes, and which means they had to get both parties to vote for the legislation, and so unless you could get some of the Democrats to vote for the Republican version, it couldn't have passed. They had to keep the deficits at a certain level,
right, yeah,
and so that's why they had to make these things temporary, so they didn't have to count that against their budget deficits.
You know, as I sit here listening to our conversation, I've never hired a tax person, but I'm thinking that it might be worth my while to do that. But other people are out there listening, saying the same thing, maybe once. Good advice is probably in order here.
I think having somebody do it, at least as a checkup, looking at things and talking about what you're doing and getting a feel for, am I doing the right things? Am I taking advantage of what I can under this law? What can I be doing now? If I no longer can itemize my deductions because I can't come up with $24,000, I can only come up with $22,000 of deductions between my charitable contributions and my mortgage interest and my taxes, what can I do? For some people who do give money to charity, what I've been telling a lot of them is you should be think about prepaying those deductions, because it'd be worth your while to get over the $24,000 number in 1 year by doubling up or tripling up your charitable contributions, and the following year just use that money that's been put into your charitable fund to pay off the charity in the future years and take the standard. So every other year, you take the standard. Every other year you itemize, you get free deductions by doing that. Simple example, I have a client that has 22,000 of deductions and 8,000 of which are charitable contributions. So he's going to take the standard. But I said, look, if you prepay the $8,000 this year and add it to your 22-year, $30,000, you'll deduct $6,000. And had you made that $8,000 deduction in 2019, you wouldn't get any tax benefit. So you picked up $6,000 of extra deductions by prepaying. So it's some real money on the table for people that have the opportunity to bunch these deductions. And there's different kinds of items like medical expenses that could be bunched in certain cases. And people have investment loans. That's another one where people can come up with a way to bunch up interest expense in a particular year that will allow them to get some free deductions from having a standard deduction 1 year and taking the itemized deductions in another year.
Wayne, great conversation. I have a feeling that as a thought leader, you're going to save us a lot of money.
That's what, you know, people don't go to a tax accountant just to put the numbers on the form. That's what they hope for them to do, to figure out, am I doing things the right way? Am I leaving money on the table?
Yeah.
And not just currently, but long term. Well, you know, what's the future going to hold? Should I be doing more in the 401k plan? Should I be taking bigger deductions? Yeah, it's critical for people to just understand their own situation. And it doesn't mean you have to get into a lot of elaborate planning. It just means you have to understand your own situation better.
Well, these are all the topics and subjects that we will cover in the weeks ahead, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Wayne Janis is the president of financial planning at Whitnell, an affiliate of Associated Bank. We're going to continue our conversation with Wayne after the bell and post it in a podcast of the opening bell later this morning at WGNradio.com. And you can hear more of our thought leader conversations there on our opening bell page and at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. And make sure you follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.